Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. Just wanted to mention, even though I'm a dual citizen, my loyalty is 100% with Open Sources.
What?
That'll come in really handy when we start our own country with its own currency.
Yes. Anyway...
Our currency's color is purple. I'm kidding. Anyway, Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. We are here every Thursday at 5 p.m. to talk the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we even sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be another twofer. Independent candidate Cornelis Clevering will be here at the bottom of the hour. But to start off this edition, we are pleased to welcome back friend of the show, Green Party candidate Steve Dick. Steve, how are you today?
It's great to be here.
Is it?
Yes, absolutely. I've been looking for it. You know what?
I heard ambivalence.
No. I'm wondering, why has it been so long? I kind of thought that you guys would have me in here. Like, I've been at this since, like, April. We had five people seek the nomination, the Green nomination. It was quite a show.
It was a show.
It was a huge show. We packed the Delta. People were lined up. Out the door, out onto the street, and I was very, very pleased to be the selected candidate.
Five rounds of voting.
Yeah. That happens when you have that ranked ballot process. It takes a while to get down to the nitty gritty.
But very democratic.
Yes. I do want to start with maybe continuing a conversation that was began last night at the Chamber of Commerce debate, and I can't remember who it was, but they were sort of testing you a bit on the idea of having sort of a bipartisan sort of cabinet that specifically is going to deal with the climate change issue. And I'm not sure you gave a really hard and fast answer, but it is something I'm curious in because I think that climate change is a nonpartisan issue. It's real. It's happening, and
absolutely,
you know, it'll bite us all eventually. But still, of the five people on that stage last night, one definitely thinks there's not a problem, and another is definitely okay with not dealing directly with the problem, and in the same way that the Green Party and the NDP are really talking about it too. So, how can we have bipartisanship on a problem when maybe at least a third of the country is at least willing to not look at the problem?
Yeah, you know, it's a point well taken. If you're not willing to look at the science and actually have a policy that's based in science, then it really doesn't make sense to engage with a party that is not looking to solve the problem and doesn't have a plan to solve the problem. And, well, you know, to be really fair, the Conservatives... they came up with a plan of reducing our carbon emissions by 30%, and they had that plan. Maybe it was 8 years ago or so when they adopted that plan. And the Trudeau government actually hasn't increased their target.
Mm-hmm.
So you know we are trying to be fair with what our different players have put on the table, and we do see it as an issue that all parties can play a role in addressing.
Mm-hmm. But again, the role that, you know, and we'll deal with the Conservatives because, I mean, there's an equally good chance that they could form, I mean, if you look at the polls, could form a government.
I don't think so.
Okay, well.
Taking bets. Do I hear five on that?
No, let's not take bets. No. This isn't a bet.
No, we didn't do that, by the way.
We're out of the prediction
legally,
business.
No.
But it does seem like the first order of business. That Andrew Scheer has said is to repeal the carbon tax.
Yeah, so you know, and to that point, I hear what you're saying. The Conservatives have made a point of making climate change a political football.
Right.
The Liberals, they adopted carbon fee and dividend. This is a green policy that's been out there for many years. I'm very proud that they stole a significant part of that policy from us, and it's really unfortunate that the Conservatives weren't big enough to say, hey, you know what? This is a market-based solution. This actually makes a lot of economic sense.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to price carbon. We're going to give all that money back to citizens. We're not going to increase government programs with it. It's going to be revenue neutral. And so, yeah, you know, I completely understand why people would say, you know, the conservatives have no, they're not, there's no internal consistency
right.
between their market-based approach and not pricing carbon pollution. And, you know, it does really undermine their position.
Well, I mean, you said it's political and, you know, it's been used as a football. And so it's very tidy. It's very easy to say we're going to repeal the carbon tax as opposed to coming up with something that may be more complicated.
Yeah. And you know, in some ways, the liberals kind of stole their they stole their thunder. You know, this is pretty, you know, like the Wynne government did that a couple times during the last election. You know, what were some of the wonderful things that the Wynne government did? They like the 15 in fairness, you know, minimum wage thing. They stole the New Democrat policy. There was a couple other things where the liberals kind of out NDP'd the NDP, and you know they were punished for it. So it's interesting to see here. You know, the liberals have adopted a conservative. It's a conservative policy.
Sure.
You know, to price carbon and to give all that revenue back to citizens. So I think it's great policy, and it's after the election's over, with Greens there at the table holding the government to account, I think we can actually get good action.
You think that would make the conservatives would just sort of like give it up, just like, well, we tried. You know, we tried to say we'll repeal the carbon tax, and people seem okay with that.
It's really important that we keep the door open.
Okay.
That's my perspective.
Okay.
It's my hope that Canadians are big enough and they actually are willing to move forward for what's best for Canada and the planet.
Okay.
It's really important in terms of our economy that we get this thing right. I hope you ask me about the pipeline because that's...
I might get there in a second. But actually, this actually does tie into it because... I feel like the liberals, and you know, we can be critical of them, and I think that some of that criticism is justified, and you know,
it's all justified. Let's go
fair
there.
Enough. But I mean, they're getting it from both sides, and I was talking to Leslie Barron, who's running for the Liberals in Wellington Halton Hills, and she mentioned that you know the Liberals are getting it from the left, Green and the NDP. The targets aren't going fast enough. We're not, you know, going after the polluters as hard as we could. But then on the other side of that, you get the Conservatives, and like even the middling action of this like carbon tax is enough to throw the Liberals out of government, and buying the pipeline comes into that too, because theoretically a lot of people in Alberta should be pleased buying a pipeline. We're moving ahead with that project. That's, you know, national infrastructure, et cetera, all those talking points. But he, you know, he doesn't get the credit for it. And I feel like it's a repeat of what happened with Notley too.
Yeah. You know, and I just, you know, let's look at the science.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can, you know, whether, you know, he's getting beaten up on it or not, it's really a matter of like looking at the science and actually what's going to work out for Canadian people, our economy and the globe. To have this idea that somehow Canada lives in this little bubble over here, then we can continue to run on a carbon-based economy and that's going to work out well for us when the rest of the world is actually looking at the science and realizes we need to reduce carbon emissions by 50%. In the next 10 years. And if we don't, we're facing catastrophic climate change feedback loops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people love our children. You know, we actually, and the thing that's crazy is we have such phenomenal solutions. The cost of renewable energy continues to fall.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes total sense. If you can cut your energy costs in half by making a capital investment, if you can drive an electric car, they're just way cooler, way cleaner, way quieter, way faster. Why wouldn't you power yourself from local clean energy? And that's what Asia is going to do. They're not going to be buying Alberta bitumen.
Right. I want to move away from this, but not so much, but because one of the things that strikes me or has struck me in this election is that there are environmental issues where we do have consensus, things like conservation, like protecting natural environments, you know, even the Ford government here in Ontario has encountered strong pushback from all sides of politics about, you know, going after the green belt and loosening restrictions on development and water too. And I know that's something you've been involved in the past, that nobody's in favor of, you know, let's sell more water to private interests. And, and you know, again, the Ford government still hasn't brought forward the Nestle contract renewal. It strikes me that we do have experience where we can reach nonpartisan consensus on environmental issues, and or some environmental issues. So I'm wondering, maybe how do we get there on like overall climate change? Is there lessons from there, do you think, that can teach us?
You know what? I'm going to broaden it out.
Okay.
And I'm going to talk about the Council of Canadian Governments. To me, this is really foundational policy that the Greens are bringing forward to bring federal, municipal, provincial, and First Nations voices equally to the table. Indigenous wisdom, my sense is that the bickering that happens through our winner-take-all political systems has a way of calling that to account. And the instability that we get from our current, governments going back and forth and not actually working on the problems, I think our First Nations people and our municipal governments actually have something to add to making better policy, better stability, long-term infrastructure decisions.
I've heard you mention that before, Steve. I'm interested in the mechanics of that. How would that work? Is like, would you have a conference once a year? Was this something that would be continuous? The Council of Canadian Governments.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, like they...
That style.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
They would have representatives. They actually are quite a well-functioning organization. You know, they're very respectful. They don't have this nasty, polarizing political stuff that's going on. They actually have something to lend to us. And man, do we need to show up at the table as a country to make sure that we are building good infrastructure, to make sure that we are having housing first projects. So people who are suffering with addictions, you know, that we actually have great solutions for them. To have our municipalities struggling with the issues of affordable housing. Look, it was Toronto, it was Vancouver that put the foreign buyers tax, tax on. This problem was taken on by municipalities, and it's actually a national issue. They did the heavy lifting. You know, it's actually our federal government should be ashamed of not stepping up to the plate much sooner. That they have caused this crisis. We should be laying it at the feet of our federal government and our municipal governments, what they've been lifting. It's unconscionable how we've been running. And again, I turn to how we have failed our First Nations people, and that they actually have a lot to offer, and they deserve a lot of respect. I think that they could bring decorum to the table, and I think it would be an ongoing conversation definitely finding like what is the best process for finding representatives. That's worthy of some good thought. But what we've seen is it's fallen apart. Mm-hmm. The federal government and the provincial governments do not play well in the sandbox. It's broken. We need to fix it. And this is a solution.
I'm curious how we get over that hump, though, because, I mean, it goes back to like just almost the naked politics of everything. You know, Doug Ford runs on a platform of I hate Trudeau and everything. Trudeau's
I tell
done.
You.
Trudeau runs on a platform
I'll
of
explain,
I hate Doug
let
Ford.
Let me explain how this works.
Okay.
It's pretty simple.
Okay.
We need a minority government. We need a minority government where the priorities for Canadian people come first. And we do not have the Prime Minister's office making all the decisions. The Prime Minister's office is so vulnerable to being the target of big business and special interests.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have policy that's based in what Canadians need, not what's best for Bay Street and big corporations, multinational corporations, not even Canadian corporations.
Right. But again, that's... Maybe it's, cynical me, but it's hard to fathom a point where, you can say you can cast off big business.
You know what? We actually need big business.
Yeah.
We want big business. Big business is really important, but you cannot have government serving big business.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose of government is to ensure that corporations are in the service of people and of Canada, not in the service of corporate profits without the interests of Canadian people.
Mm-hmm. I think this also tiptoes into another area of interest for you, the electoral reform.
Oh, yeah.
Are you still passionate even after 4 years? It's not just the federal picture, too. Like, BC had a referendum.
Quebec is moving forward with it.
Are they moving forward with the referendum?
Well, what, Legault said, you know, the first week of his government, he says, and we're not going to do a Trudeau, which is a pretty strong statement, right? Which is, and so it'll be interesting to see. Like, it is challenging to have someone who has 100% of the power to actually do what's right for democracy in general.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just see how important it is in terms of coming up with best policy that we do have Canadians represented and not this this winner-take-all fickle, I can use the word hysterical hysteresis. It just goes all one way or all the other way. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen in this election. You're still going to end up with a majority government. It's a crapshoot right now. There's so much undecided out there.
Right.
So that's it. To me, it's just so important that we protect our democracy from what we're seeing south of the border, where you can have, you know, a populist person who invests, actually just buys an election. Says, look, you know, if I invest enough money in this spot, this geographic location, and this geographic location, I can move those however many votes I need to in those couple places, and I can actually, you know, get 100% of the power. It's really important to understand how democracy's changed in the digital age.
Right. But I think that's also a bigger conversation, and it requires a lot of education on the part of, you know, people to help the general public get informed and the general public to help get informed. And I think one of the things I'm concerned about is over the last 4 years is that the lesson has been be more cynical, because you can have the referendum and it comes back and fails, or you can vote the person who says this is the last election for first past the post and it's not.
or you can just get out there and vote for something that you believe in, vote green.
Right.
That's what I'm all in for, and it's really important that we do this. It's so important for our climate. It's so important for our economy that we actually believe in we can move forward, that there are good solutions. This is no time to be cynical. This is a time to actually open our eyes, open our hearts, and think about the consequences if we don't vote for something that we really believe in.
Mm-hmm. I remember going back to April when you were nominated. You were talking about putting the fun back in politics.
Oh yeah,
have you done that in this
Vera
campaign?
And I we after the Arboretum. I love the Village by the Arboretum debate. I so value our seniors. Just they've seen years and years of politics. They've seen times when politics weren't quite so nasty. After that, we went out and we danced at Shakespeare's Arms. The Blackwater Trio was playing. Phenomenal. So, you know what? It is hard. It is hard to face some of the nastiness that's been out there without actually taking out the ashes, going for a dance, and having fun with your people.
Hmm. Has it been different this time than when you ran in 2011? People, I mean, I know you ran for the provincial election in 2011. How's it changed in 8 years?
Oh, you know what? It's still incredibly humbling. There's just so much to know. And I've been busy doing a lot of different things between now and then, and yeah, you know what, the Green Party's developed significantly. Having Mike Schreiner's success, you know, having made history here, we're not facing that the Greens will never win comment, and so it's been a really great process. We have such a phenomenal team. So many energized volunteers. You know, it's really about people power. That's what the Green Party's about.
And yeah, I think should also name drop the Greens in Prince Edward Island.
Oh yeah.
And you know, there's been a shift, but I'm wondering, has it been enough of a shift? You're talking about holding the balance of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this will be the year?
Absolutely. Our numbers are phenomenal. We're actually ahead of the game from where Mike Schreiner was at this point in his campaign, in terms of identified, you know, the number of contacts we have and where we're at. Things are really in great shape.
Mm. Do you think you would be in the same place without, you know, Mike's built quite a machine.
And he sure has.
It's you know,
yeah. Mike is an incredibly talented politician, you know, and you know he was at it for what 8 years before he ran here in Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's like actually developing the policy yourself in a small, you know, well, in concert with, you know, the grassroots Greens in Ontario, it does make you a very powerful voice for change.
Mm. I want to talk about your background as a business person. You're the CEO of Guelph Solar, and this gets into, you know, you're always talking about the trillions of dollars that could be ours if we get in on clean tech. For people who may be wondering, you know, in terms of the practicalities and what that would look like, what is your experience as a founder and a CEO of a clean tech company that, you know, maybe you can offer people who may be wondering, how do we implement? What does that look like?
It starts off with zero interest loans.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government needs to show up with zero interest loans. People want to do the right thing. Businesses want to do the right thing, and we need to provide the right business financial environment so they can. And absolutely, renewable energy, it's all about long-term financing. You know, it takes, maybe 13 years or something like that for the investments to pay off. And there'll be energy efficiency upgrades that'll have a faster payoff than that.
Mm-hmm.
But it just makes so much sense. There's $500 million that the city of Guelph sends out of our city each year. That's $500 million that we use to buy energy and bring it into our city. We can actually be generating a lion's share of that energy right here in our own city.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be wealthier and much more sustainable.
Well, how does that begin?
Well, you want to have the loan.
Mm-hmm.
The loan that provides the business case. And then absolutely what's going to happen is you'll have contractors that will go around and say, okay, look, give me your energy bills. You know, I want to see what your natural gas bill is. I want to see what your electric bill is. And they'll analyze that. They'll look at the home. They'll figure out, okay, well, this home, you know, needs more insulation, needs better windows. Yes, solar panels or air source heat pump. There are so many phenomenal solutions. That business will put together a plan. They'll say, okay, you know, you're going to save this much money this year, this much money that year. And they'll give you, you know, like a, I don't know, like a 12 or 13 year plan for mm-hmm. paying off this loan. And contractors that can actually hit the numbers, like Guelph Solar, we're a 5-star rated clean energy business. And that's because we care about our customers.
Maybe you're the guy to answer this, because we've talked about this before, that why don't we just build houses with solar panels on the roofs now?
Mm. Yeah, why don't we do that?
Mm. Well, some homes are doing that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a... And it does. This is not complicated. Like, you don't have to, like, it doesn't have to be a funny looking house. It doesn't have to be a specifically oriented house. It does help if you don't, like, put all kinds of, like, dormers and peaks and valleys in a house. In a
right.
room. But apart from that, you know, we recently were involved in a project here in Guelph. This home, you know, it's a little bit more expensive than your regular home, but it's actually powering more energy than the home it needs. It's actually powering enough power for 2 electric cars. It completely changes the whole business case of a home. This is a home that pays for itself.
And that tech is improving, like, yearly, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. And just incredibly comfortable, you know, and it just feels good. The people who live in that home, they feel like they've arrived. Like, this is home. This is Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need for all citizens across Canada.
I know that Evan Ferrari, who... You know, too, the head of Emerge Guelph.
Mm.
I've heard him talk about how building standards we have are the worst standards for sustainability.
Mm.
That, you know, it almost seems like even this this minutia level of just, you know, the building code.
Yeah.
We have to go down into that.
Let me talk on that.
Yeah,
it's like, the building code sucks. You know, it needs to be upgraded. But that's not at all the approach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we just need to show people, like, a builder who can actually build a financially better case. And so it's not the building code. Of course, you need the building inspectors not to stick their foot in it. Like, that can be a bit of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly, builders are going to do the right thing because that's what people are going to want.
Right.
They're not going to build a code. That doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like building a pipeline. That doesn't make any sense. You know, why would you do that? It's like nobody actually wants that bitumen.
Right. But to the people who work in the oil fields, it makes sense. The people who rely on that oil business, it makes sense. And
let me clarify this.
Okay.
It actually doesn't make sense to the people who work in the oil field.
Okay.
Like, they are facing a transition.
Yeah.
They're going to need to, you know, have jobs in the clean energy sector. Gold Creek, Alberta, a phenomenal little project going on. There's a 5-megawatt geothermal. It is an old oil well. They have so much geo heat there. They're taking that heat up and they're creating electricity. It's phenomenal. Those are my stomping grounds. I grew up in northern Alberta. There's all kinds of opportunities. What this really is about, it's about the banks.
Mm-hmm.
Our financial banks, Commercial Bank of Canada, you know, Nova Scotia, just all of them. You know, they got billions and billions of dollars invested in the oil industry. They're underwater. They know they're underwater. They are the ones that showed up at Justin Trudeau's office and said, "Hey, buddy, let's not have this the music stop while you're the prime minister."
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
This pipeline it's going nowhere.
Mm-hmm. But you just made the case, and like they're saying, like, don't stop the music, but the music stopped. It's, you know, so what are we dancing to?
and this is it. It's like, does the emperor have any clothes?
Mm.
And we are in the midst of a complete energy rework. It's disruptive technology that the whole world is embracing. Clean energy, you know, it's like the cost of solar energy, it's like 7 cents a kilowatt hour, 8 cents a kilowatt hour. It just doesn't make sense to continue to invest in old infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Wind power, you know, it's under 4 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Alberta has the best solar regime in the country, the best wind regime. They're going to come out ahead, you know, on this. But we need to stop lying to them. And we need to stop subsidizing the fossil fuel industry. It makes them look good. You know, if they can't support themselves now, you know, when will they ever grow up?
Well, I don't know about clothes, but I wouldn't mind one of those nice, like, liberal Letterman jackets that Trudeau wears. That's pretty tight.
You know, I got this really great little thing on my coat right here. This is a see this little right there.
Yeah, the Wheel of Fortune.
Well, no, that's the UN 17 Sustainable Development Goals.
Okay,
and our whole platform is based around this, and this is actually how you create a world that actually works for people. You make sure they have food. You make sure they have clean water. You make sure they have education. You make sure their children have medicine. And this is how you avoid having millions and millions of refugees show up on your doorstep. You take immediate climate action. You make sure that everybody has the very basics that they need in their own country. And this is how you have, you know, sustainable, prosperous growth around the world. The Green Party actually has the strongest foreign policy platform of all the parties, because we're looking and learning from what the UN is asking for.
Steve, I'm going to ask you real quick to tell people where they can find out more about your campaign.
Please go to steveforguelph.ca, or better yet, stop by the office, 34 Gordon. We would love to have you stop by and get involved. We are a people-powered campaign. The way we're going to win this is we're going to knock on more doors. We're going to get more people out to the polls. People are just not proud to vote Liberal. There's so many things that they're unhappy with. And mm-hmm. the Greens are going to get out and vote, and that's why we're going to win.
All right. We're not in the prediction business, but we'll see if that turns out to be true. But Steve, Dick, thank you so much for coming by today.
You guys are awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. And we're going to take a quick break and then come right back and reset for Brother Case. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
And that was the wonderful country sounds of Ryan Skinny Dick. And honestly, I found that CD lying on the floor when I walked in. It had to happen. Ryan Dick, D-Y-C-K. Well, what are the odds, right? Anyway, that's from his album Skinny Dick and Friends. And that song was Goodbye Seems So Easy.
I think somebody left it out for you.
It's possible. It's a setup, man. It's a setup.
It is a setup. It's, and we've set up for... another friend of the show, Cornelis Clevering, is joining us now. Brother Case, how are you today?
Well, I'm great. Thanks, Adam and Scotty, for inviting me once again. What is this, the fourth time?
Feels like it.
At least. At least. So you're not running for the marijuana party this time.
No, I'm taking a page out of your own book. I think in one of your articles you said, independent clevering. Well, I was never an independent, but,
independent-minded.
Fairly decentralized when it came to the marijuana party.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a common goal, of course. But no, not this time. I'm running as an independent.
I have to ask, do they still exist?
Yeah, they're running two or three candidates as far as I know.
Oh, okay. I saw them on the list, but you never know because sometimes parties become delisted regularly, right?
So. Yeah. But, I mean, it's not because, marijuana has been legalized and problem solved. I think we've had you on to talk about it, that it's not so much that the situation is being resolved and that everything is hunky-dory with the way we've legalized cannabis, that there are still issues to be had.
Yeah, it's not a complete picture. It's an ongoing struggle. Good luck to the party. Good luck to the guys who are running, for the cause. But I've moved on, and we've got other issues to deal with.
Well, what can you maybe articulate a bit about, what you think of where we are at with legalization?
Well, it's sort of quasi-legal. Mm. Of course, people that are allowed to grow four plants, that's a step forward. People that are allowed to possess 30 grams or less, that's a step forward. So you won't get busted doing that. But everything else is the same. Plus, now if you're driving while caught smoking, there's a fine. You can be charged with an offense, criminal offense, if it comes down to being impaired, in the opinion of the police. So that's not cool.
Yeah. Speaking of getting busted, the police showed you the door at the Chamber of Commerce All Candidates debate last night. They just walked you to the front door, right? They didn't take you to spend the night in holding or anything like that, right?
No, not this time. But it's not
this time.
Look,
fair enough.
The Chamber of Commerce did this the last time at the Cotton Club,
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand that they're the ones breaking the law because the chief electoral officer is very clear that candidates have an opportunity to meet the public. How else are you going to meet the public? So, there's been amendments made to the Canada Elections Act, and they say, you're breaking the rules. What rules? I'm just trying to reach out to the public.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the Chamber of Commerce is terrified of democracy. You saw that yesterday. They had them all corralled behind gates, and the public were in the stadiums, and it was all skeptical, as all.
Well,
like,
I mean, part of that has to do with the setting, the chamber, which is very, very staid, very, not
formal.
Formal is what.
It's not public friendly. Let's.
No,
face
I
it, okay?
I would concur. Yeah.
So and anyway, because this has happened so often, I got together with a group of people. We call ourselves a coalition of concerned citizens, and we're putting on an all-candidates event, the 17th of October at Chalmers Church. Everyone's invited. All the candidates are invited. Open mics on the floor. It's going to be videotaped live and podcast live. Everyone's going to be there. I hope you guys are there, too.
So
you have confirmations?
Yes, it's all ready to go.
Okay, cool. Is Dr. Sashan going to be there, the conservative candidate?
Well, I'm going to invite him, but it's like, what's his name? Michael Vasling. Has everybody ever seen him?
Yes. Yeah, no, I actually talked to him on Tuesday.
Wow.
I talked to him for about an hour.
Well, I'm going to call him up and say, come on, Michael, get out here. You are also a candidate. Show your face, for heaven's sakes.
I gave him your number, actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, he won't call me, so I'll have to call him.
We'll work that out.
All right.
Later.
We've worked that out. But, I do agree. And I think I haven't done a scientific survey or anything, but I do think this election has probably been really bad for, just sort of limiting the debate to the five main party candidates. And there's been a lot of exclusion, I think, for not just you, but for Juanita and Gordon and anybody else who's running.
And it's not the first time. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. This is exclusion politics. Mm. Like, democracy is broken in Canada. That this should go on, and not everyone is allowed an equal voice on stage, isn't it? It's apprehensible. I can't understand it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about your candidacy. To, you know, you're running as an independent this time. So what is it that you wanted to, and you had a great line at the social justice debate that you wanted to put the common back in the House of Commons.
Yes.
But, you know, what is it that you can maybe say as an independent candidate that you can't with like a party affiliation? What is it that you wanted to say in this election?
Well, first of all, you know, those who are a member of the party, they're in a straitjacket. They're not allowed to like venture forth and, you know, how shall I say, do something individual. You can't. You have to like put the cloak of the party policies before you, even when it becomes obvious that it's totally contradictory or it's not appropriate. Mm-hmm. And so, the individual. The independent can speak his or her own mind. And in that way, is more of a commoner, you know, speaking the voice of the people, the workers, etc., you know, and not getting the green light or the red light from Ottawa all the time. That's just the way democracy is not supposed to work.
Mm-hmm. It's tougher, though, because, you know, part of the party apparatus does come with benefits, resources.
Yes and no. I mean, there's that straitjacket affair, and what happens if the party has a leader that nobody likes? Then perhaps in a number of writings, those candidates are particularly good candidates, and yet people say, well, you know, we don't like Justin Trudeau anymore, so I'm not voting Liberal. I think that's inherently unfair for good candidates.
But, you know, it begs the question, unless everybody decides they're just going to run on their own steam, on their own, I guess, their own qualifications, you know, we're kind of got a political system that's based around the parties.
Yes.
I mean, even Maxime Bernier, who's, you know, as conservative as you can think, felt that he had no home in the Conservative Party, so he doesn't go off and runs, you know, as an independent, he starts his own party. It's, you know, how do we get over party politics?
Everyone should run as independents. They should all be independents. When they set up the principles of parliamentary democracy in Canada, it was based on the idea of commoners coming to the House of Commons. They didn't have the idea of, like, big party politics. That just wasn't part of the soup.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you bring back democracy to Canada, by having individual independents running to represent the community. Only then will we return to where, you know, democracy makes any sense in Ottawa and real change will occur. Without that, Adam, I'm afraid it's not going to happen.
And I guess this time around we got Wilson Raybould and Philpott as independents.
Well, that's true too, that, you know, if
high
they
profile
can,
independents, you'd say, right, because they've already sat once. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so, I mean, it's almost like a prime time for independence. That
yeah. It's always prime time for independence.
But, you know, how do you break the wheel, though? Because I think a lot of people hear that and they go, like, yes, I agree. I would much rather vote for Case or vote for Lloyd or vote for Steve and not have to worry about, you know, thinking about what would Elizabeth May do or what would Justin Trudeau do or what have you. It's, you know, the elections are tied to party identity. And I've seen this on the local level, too. People don't know what to do if they can't identify you by the color of your team.
Well, you know, listen, I'm out there as an alternative voice. I'm out there for people that are completely fed up with the way the traditional political system works. But they don't want to give up their vote. So out of frustration, what are they going to do? Stay home or cast an invalid ballot? No, they can vote for a guy like myself who's stepping outside of the traditional political arena. And so don't waste your vote. Vote for someone who more subscribes to your ideas, you know, and is willing to speak out and challenge these political party candidates and challenge them on the principles of democracy. That's what we should be doing. And that, as an independent, is what I am doing.
Well, let's talk about what people are voting for then. You've, and you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like you want to make foreign affairs a bigger issue than it has been in this election.
Sure, and I'll tell you why that's the case. The climate change movement is global. Of course, transnational capitalism has been global for a long time. But because we're now seeing a international movement that is global in scope and requires an international plan to address climate change. It's beyond nationalism, okay? So that's why it's so important that people that are running on the national plane are also in consideration of a future sort of World Congress group that controls the entire planet, makes plans for the entire planet, whereby, say, the Amazon doesn't get burned and you can't do anything about it because of nationalist interest. Or, you know, the manufacturing of weapons, for example. Well, that takes a global approach. Certainly the idea of addressing climate change, you've got to fight that on a global scale. A national scope isn't going to cut it anymore.
Mm-hmm. So more internationalism, you know, more globalism, you know, although that can be a loaded term, but, you know, we really have to think beyond what's on going on in our own shores and work more collaboratively across the planet on something like climate change.
Well, that's it. And, you know, our hands are being forced by the issues of climate change. Mm. How this planet is going to change will determine largely the way this planet is going to evolve. And so I think national governments and those sorts of things will be a thing of the past. In the future, we're going to have to come together, brothers and sisters, on a global scale. And I think we're seeing the seeds of that happening now.
Mm-hmm. You made military spending a point when you're at the social justice debate. And I think that as Canadians, we don't think of ourselves as necessarily a military power. But how do you see things?
Well, you know, of course, Canada is part of NATO, for example. It's funny, you know, when Canada talks about like inclusiveness and helping refugees. Well, part of NATO, that is, Canadian planes were bombing like Afghanistan, and they were, you know, in Iraq and Syria and Libya. That creates a lot of refugees. So it's sort of like hypocritical in one way. Mm. But more importantly, because Canada is part of NATO, they are committed to like 2% of GNP for like military spending, which cuts directly into the budget for social services. Mm. The other thing is NATO is committed to first strike using nuclear weapons. That's a dangerous posture to take. Canada should get the hell out of NATO and save itself a lot of money and declare this country as a nuclear-free zone.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Trump wants that 2%.
Well, he probably wants more, you know what I mean?
You're probably right. You know, it's interesting because Juanita's talked about nuclear disarmament too, and it's, you know, it is a danger, but, you know, I also feel like a lot of people see it as a danger of the past. Like, there's no Cuban Missile Crisis in the near future, and I think maybe this is where the global economy takes some kind of credit for this, is that, you know, we nuke somewhere that's, you know, lost customers. And you hate to put it that, you know, basically, but I mean, in terms of, you know, the dangers of nuclear weapons, you know, why are you focused on that? And why do you think maybe those of us in the general public aren't focused on that?
I think it hasn't become, a fundamental issue. I mean, it's sort of cyclical, which is sad because nuclear weapons, as we speak, and there are thousands of them aimed at all the cities of the world, major cities of the world, on 20% or 20-minute standby. Like, I'm not making this up, Adam. Like, if those nuclear weapons go off and they're ready to go off, I think you're facing a serious catastrophe. Mm-hmm. And let me say something else. Like, the people that are in the global climate change movement, they will have to confront the issue of nuclear weapons and military spending if they want to do anything at all about fighting climate change.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because we brought this up with Juanita, that, you know, one of the main U.S. agencies that takes climate change the most seriously is the Pentagon.
Well, and they're quite polluters themselves.
I mean, they're polluters, but I mean, they're the ones who are making plans for dealing with, you know, our large influxes of climate refugees, and what does the world look like when people are going to war over water and resources, and, you know, when food starts running low.
Sure, but I also like to point out that the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists has placed the atomic clock at 2 minutes before midnight. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's, you know, should be forgotten. Like, obviously, the issue is dire, to say the least. And people aren't taking notice because there is no real international crisis where that may occur. But it may occur at any minute. Unlike climate change, you know, we're not sure what the effects are going to be. Might be a decade or two or three. But nuclear war is a possibility every day that we are alive.
So what does, you know, if you had the power, what does, you know, military spending look like? Is it just like we go down to zero? We don't have a military like Switzerland or, you know,
Costa Rica. Yeah. No, something like that. Why does Canada have this? They spend upwards of like $22 billion a year. They're planning to spend like $15 to $17 billion on maybe the F-35 fighters, 88 aircraft. But why? Why do we need, you know, advanced attack aircraft for the, you know, the Canadian Air Force? It makes no sense. Like, why spend $22 billion for what? What is involved in all of that? Yes, of course, there should be enough money for, like, national security. That is, you know, like police, you know, domestic issues.
Right.
But there's really no need for large military standings in most of these countries, if all the countries. In fact, it's against international law, for heaven's sakes. So take Costa Rica, for example. You know, there's not too many countries that don't have standing armies. Switzerland is one of them. They get along just fine.
Since we're looking to other countries, I did take note of something you said at the social justice debate where you're talking about an independent judiciary like they have in Thailand. And I know you spend a lot of time in Thailand, but so can you just maybe explain how that works in Thailand and maybe why you think that's a good fit for Canada?
Sure. So the issue here, they have something called a constitutional court. There are 15 members that sit on the court, and the public and institutions can bring constitutional issues before the court. So what happens in Canada is, take the robocall, for example. So I launched a robocall legal challenge, and it goes in front of a judge first, and then it's appealed, and it goes in front of the Federal Court of Appeal, and then finally it ends up in the Supreme Court of Canada. Well, that took a total of 5 years.
Mm.
But in Thailand, for example, if such an issue were to arise in an election, someone or a political party could go directly to the court, file papers, and they would hear the case almost immediately. So that's an important, evolution in the system of courts in Canada.
We also like to think, though, that our courts are, you know, more deliberative, that maybe it's not about the fastest action, but the right action, no matter how long that takes.
Well, if it doesn't take less, take the robocall, for example. It took 5 years. Like, who did that benefit? It didn't benefit anyone.
Mm.
And like, it could have, but because it took so long, then another election came along, and they buried the whole thing. Sad, because that whole thing, we talked about that,
yeah.
That whole thing on under the Charter, Section 3, could have really advanced the jurisprudence of what it means to have a free and fair election in Canada. That's where the thing was, that's where I feel the worst about it, that the court did not consider that question for future elections of Canada.
You weren't in the robocall documentary. I saw it. I thought maybe they'd squeeze you in.
Well, you know, that's okay. They can check it online. There's a lot of information there. It was about the Council of Canadians. They did good work in that area. You know, I didn't want to, crash your party. Although in hindsight, I think I should have done that. I should have come together and said, let's work on this together. But that opportunity was lost forever.
You live in infamy on Google anyway. what would you like to be talking about in this election? I mean, but stuff that isn't talking about. I mean, we've been talking about, you know, foreign affairs. That should be more of an issue, you think, you know. But what else? What does Brother Case want to talk about?
Well, okay, so nuclear weapons is a big issue. Military spending is a big issue. And clearly, climate change is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, climate change, we could talk about that for a moment. So the way I see it is fossil fuel capitalism has brought us this crisis. And, you know, the people that are now protesting against that, they're going to have to make a decision. They're going to have to confront fossil fuel capitalism, and then what? What are you going to do? And everyone will tell you the only way to stop the carbon from getting into the air is to keep the stuff in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how are you going to do that? And of course, my position is you have to nationalize. You have to nationalize these companies and move on. Of course, by doing that, if you try to nationalize the fossil fuel companies, you're going to end up taking on Bay Street. You're going to have to taking on the banking sector. Mm. You're taking on, like, Canadian capitalism. Well, those are revolutionary moments, my friend.
You can make the argument that Trudeau has nationalized Trans Mountain Pipeline and gotten a lot of flack for it.
Well, you know, he went halfway. Now, his dad did the right thing. In 1974, he set up the NEP, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he nationalized the energy sector so he could set up Petro-Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So why didn't Justin go all the way and, like, nationalize the entire energy sector? He didn't have nothing to worry about. He has the power to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you why he didn't. Because the fossil fuel industry supports his party financially, in other ways. And so he's loath to take them on, just like he's loath to take on the offshore accounts of Canadian billionaires. Why don't they ever move on that?
Hmm. It's interesting, too, though, that, you know, there's a lot of people who are upset about Trudeau not building a pipeline, not getting more oil to market. And you know, he's in this interest, and we talked a little with Steve about this, that he's in this interesting predicament where he hasn't done enough to satisfy people on the left who want action on climate change, but he hasn't done enough to satisfy people on the right who want, you know, more oil, you know, dug up. It's interesting.
It's, come on, Adam. It's totally contradictory. Here's a guy.
I'm not saying he's not contradictory.
Well,
but...
okay, yeah, so he's a little confused because, you know, he's under the gun from the fossil fuel industry. So
yeah.
He buys this pipeline that isn't going to go anywhere. And then he turns around as, oh, well, you know, we have to, like, control the amount of carbon in the air. And yet, what's this pipeline supposed to do? Carry a lot of bitumen that's going to market, is going to put a lot of carbon in the air. And then they turn around and say, yeah, but we'll make $500 million selling oil to fight climate change.
Yeah.
Isn't that a little bit ridiculous?
Well, you called the carbon tax a money-making scheme.
Well, it's a money-making scheme, but, you know, it's the fossil fuel industry and the banksters. They're the ones that should be, like, paying the buck, not consumers. That I don't get.
Mm. You don't think we have a role in, you know, individually reducing our carbon footprint? I mean, I know you go everywhere on your bike, but
right.
You're doing your part.
Well, no, but that's it. That's where the investment should be in Canada. It should be in, like, public transit, not replacing the internal combustion engine with a bunch of electric cars. Then you got all millions and millions of batteries leaking cadmium and mercury in the environment. That isn't... Mm. No, the answer is let's invest in... effective public transit, and I'm talking about nationwide. And Canada could be a leader in that, you know, in that new technology. That's where the jobs lie, right there.
Well, it seems like a good place to leave it on because we have consensus between you and Steve on that point.
I'm sure we do.
Brother Case, if people want to learn more about your campaign, how can people find out about you?
Okay, I just got a website up so they can read my campaign, and it's my buddy Bob Bell. So it's bobbell.ca/case.pdf.
Oh, okay.
And I have an email address. It's it's brothercase@gmail.com.
Okay.
And you can reach me there. Send me anything you like. I'll answer your emails.
And that debate is next Thursday.
Next Thursday? 7. Yeah, everyone's going to be there, guaranteed.
All right, we'll hold you to it. Brother Case, thank you again for coming by. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, gentlemen.
All right, and that's it for this week's show. Next week, we will end the interview series with the incumbent, fittingly enough. Lloyd Longfield will be joining us. And if you want to listen to this show or any of our past shows, you can find us. You find it on our website every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through your favorite podcast app at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Find us on social media at Facebook, Open Sources Newswire, or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph or at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to my politics site, guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog. And there's a new thing there.
There is
spannerbook.wordpress.com.
A rare new thing.
I'm working on it. Chief.
I'm not your boss. Anyway, stay tuned for DJ
we'll
Sounds Good to Me
lot.
At the top of on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back here for one more Thursday before Election Day.
Woo!
At 5 p.m. for more open sources, and we'll see you then.